Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I use the Complete Idiot's Guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified. I've always felt that way.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior higher.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Church news. Guess which church? Your church. This is Wretched Radio. Let's talk about the institution Jesus loves that you're a part of. At least I hope you're a part of. I hope that you are a joyful serving member of a local church. If not, find the best one you can, join it, and start participating joyfully with unity, which is exactly what Jesus prayed for us, that we would have unity. But it isn't easy, is it? Why? Because you got a little old something called sin. Furthermore, you've got churches that have varying degrees of good and bad doctrine, and that goes for all churches. In fact, I was reading, I'm pretty certain it was the 1689 London Baptist Confession. I was looking for something that we could say on Sunday morning at Alpharetta Bible Church that talks about the one another's, the serving one another. Having unity in the body where we love one another, where that is the place where soul care takes place, where we move from brokenness to wholeness. And I believe it was chapters 26 and or 27. 26 was about the church. Chapter 27 was about the communion of saints. And by the way, if you are a hymn writer, we need some more hymns about the one another's. Because the only ones that I could find were like, they will know we are Christians by our love, and then, let there be peace on earth. We need better hymns. We need some communion of saints, that we are with union in Christ, and therefore in union with one another. And I found it fascinating that even this great historical confession acknowledged that even in the best of churches, there is a mixture of good and bad teaching. Uh-oh. Whoa. What's up with that? That might be a hard pill for some of us to swallow, because those of us who love to be doctrinal purists, and I'm one of them, we think we pretty much have it right. But here's the reality. According to the 1689 London Baptist Confession, not everything. And there's a mixture. Jimmy, you want to Google 1689 London Baptist Confession?
Yes.
And there's a lot. The church has like 7 different sections to it. And then it's communion of saints. It might be section. Just read through it. It's not that long. And find the section that I'm talking about that confesses in this confession that churches have a mixture of good and bad teaching. And that, I don't like reading stuff like that, because it's like, well, no, we're trying not to have any bad teaching here. And that's good. And that is right. We're never going to lose that. But we should also recognize that sometimes we're just going to be a little off on stuff. And most certainly, we're going to have varying opinions on different issues. Aren't we? The big one these days, in my estimation, that's still simmering, and I don't think it's come to a complete head inside of the body yet, how we deal with church-state relations. You got people that just have a difference of opinion on these things. And Jesus says, have unity, get along. You're going to have to overlook some stuff, because even in good churches, there's going to be a blend of good and bad, and you're going to certainly be sitting next to somebody in the pew who's got a difference of opinion than you do. How you responded to the assassination attempt, somebody's going to have a different response than you. In fact, it was fascinating. I watched it on Sunday, and I don't think any of these reactions were wrong, but I just heard a slew of different reactions. Did you see it? Do you believe it? The ear, and like a millimeter away, all the way to, yeah, I saw it, and then went back to cutting the lawn. All right. there's a difference of opinion there. We're going to divide over that? Are we going to not be living in the joy of unity that Jesus prayed for? Jimmy, it looks like you found it.
I did.
Which one is it?
It's the third under the church, and
that's chapter 26, right?
Chapter 26, correct.
All right.
The purest churches under heaven are subject to mixture and error, and some have so degenerated as to become churches, no churches of Christ, but synagogues of Satan.
Yeah, okay. So we love the second part. Yeah! Yeah! Wait, what? The best, what did it say? The best of churches?
Yes.
Are subject to a mixture of pure and false?
The purest churches under heaven are subject to mixture and error.
I hate that. Mm. Yeah, we don't want that. And I think that's the right sentiment. But it's so unpleasant to think about my church? Especially if you're a pastor. Wait, what, my church? You're an elder. What are you talking about here? Well, that's the reality. Because you're just going to have some varying opinions, and we're just going to be off on some stuff. It doesn't mean that we just let the floodgates open to foolishness and to heresy. But it is wise to recognize that it can happen, and no church is perfect. And that we are to live with these people, and that we are to do things with these people, and we are to be unified and overlook so much with one another. I mean, can you imagine going to church with Jimmy, what that would take to overlook that? Can you imagine? Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you, you know what it, the hardest people to go to church with are people like me, because we really do want pure doctrine. Yeah. And that's like a big thing. And I think that we can sometimes forget that people are in different places, and even the best theologian on the planet, even the purest church, has a mixture of truth and error. That should little humility, six elements that are usually found where biblical unity is lacking, and then of course the contrary, six elements that cause biblical unity. Let's start with those that typically are present. If your church is not a place where it's like, this is good, sweet here, I like it, I feel good, I want to participate, I want to stick around after church and talk to people, I'm getting there early to hang out with those folks. Is your church like that? Maybe this is why it's not. There's usually inconsistent teaching that begets dissimilar beliefs. So if the pulpit ain't shooting straight all the time, well, then people are going to pick up on that, and they're going to have a variance of theologies, and you're going to struggle for unity. Pastor, make sure you're consistent. That's the encouragement to help biblical unity actually abound. Might I suggest it starts with a common hermeneutic? If you can all be on the same page with how to enter. Do you remember Calvin Robinson? He's now a Nordic Catholic. He was an Anglican, found himself in a kerfuffle, not getting along with them because of their wokeness and because of their views on gender and marriage. And so now he's a Nordic Catholic. And did you hear, do you remember how he interpreted the Bible? Well, Eve is a picture of Mary. Mary's the better Eve. What? What is that? How did he get there? He's got a bad hermeneutic. He's got an allegorical hermeneutical approach. And if your church doesn't share the same way to read the Bible, you're going to go bonkers. What was that thing yesterday? Some pastor, Donald Trump, was shot at 6:11, and Ephesians 6:11 says, put on the full armor, and then Charlie Kirk chimes in, and look at the next verse. We don't war against flesh and blood. Hold the phone, Henrietta. What is that? A hermeneutical dog's breakfast. You don't have the same hermeneutic, probably not going to have unity. Number two, there's often the inclusion of persistent, unrepentant immorality and sin. It's overlooked. Just goes on. Well, we'll just be patient. You got to deal with it. And that could mean church discipline. Number three, there's a neglectful inclusion of false converts that results from weak evangelism. That's why preaching from the pulpit, there sometimes has to be some strong preaching, not all the time, but sometimes it's for those that are there. They could be tares. You don't want to go around plucking them out. That's unwise. That's Matthew 13. But strong preaching will do that, or it'll convert them. And if that's not happening and your church is getting filled up with tares, you got trouble. There's not going to be unity, and it won't be sweet. There's a neglectful inclusion of false teaching. There's an exclusion of church discipline and admonishment. Ain't nothing make you tremble quite like church discipline done rightly. There's weak leadership that fails to address these causes of disunity. And it's probably a tender pastor who feels like, well, if I address it, we might lose some people. You're right, but if you don't address it, you almost certainly will, because they don't want to be in a place where people aren't sweet with one another. Is this subject of unity easy? No, it's not. And wow, don't we see a whole lot of fracturing going on these days, even in conservative Bible teaching circles? Add to this list of six, hey, be careful that you rate the issue, that you do theological triage, that you recognize what are we, you've got a different, you were blasé about the Donald Trump shooting and somebody's all worked up about it. Fair enough, but question. What level of hierarchy in the theological ladder, what rung does this reach? If we don't do that, we'll never have much unity. This is Wretched Radio.
Breaking news, scientists have predicted a massive heat wave of savings at Wretched's global warming sale. See what I did there? Okay, that was kind of weird. Anyway, all this week through the 21st, prices are definitely falling in the Wretched store. Up to 60% off, free shipping on orders over $50, because we believe in actual measurable benefits. And this sale is so hot, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego started sweating. Okay, all right, I'll stop with the bad puns. And unlike certain climate models, our sale delivers as promised. Visit wretched.org/sale before these deals are gone. Stock up now on solid biblical wisdom. That's Wretched's global warming sale at wretched.org/sale, where the only thing rising faster than alleged sea levels will be your biblical knowledge. Okay, I promise that's the last one. Wretched.org/sale.
Preborn Ministries, pro-life ministry, rescuing babies. The war, let me tell you, it's raging out there, and Preborn is right on the front lines providing what is so powerful, ultrasounds. When a woman sees her baby 80% of the time, it's a no-brainer. That's my child. That's a baby in there, not a blob of tissue. Worldview is getting pumped into everybody through Hollywood, social media, the internet, universities, businesses, and government. If you'd be kind enough to consider supporting Preborn Ministries, that would be groovy. Lives are saved. Women, men, hear the gospel. Please consider supporting this network of clinics that is doing such great work. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
All right, Christian, are you, like most of us, concerned about the direction our culture is headed? Yeah, well, listen up, because we are about to launch a brand new initiative within this ministry. We're bringing together 8 brilliant Christian thinkers to create content that tackles today's toughest issues head on. Think of it like a Christian version of the Daily Wire. These experts will be producing articles, podcasts, videos, and even homeschool curriculum. They'll cover everything from ethics and evangelism to science and Gen Z issues. It's all about equipping you to navigate our complex and ever-changing brave new world with biblical wisdom. But here's the thing. We need your support in order to make this happen. We're currently in the middle of a match campaign, a $250,000 match campaign, where every dollar you're able to give will be doubled. If you want to learn more about this initiative and the incredible minds behind it, just visit wretched.org/fellows right now. That's wretched.org/fellows.
Know your church fathers. Hippolytus was perhaps the most important theologian of the 3rd century. He wrote a 10-volume book called Refutation of All Heresies, which catalogued and criticised hundreds of pagan philosophies, Gnostic teachings, and Christian heresies. Hippolytus was exiled and died a martyr under the Roman Empire. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Todd?
Kind of impatient, aren't we, Jimmy? This is Wretched Radio. Let's do take two on that. You ready? I'm going to do take two.
Todd?
Have you noticed that that's the trend for people when they are like looking for a piece of paper, they go looking something up? It's okay. Exaggeration, but everybody does that. Hey, excuse me. Do you have that one folder? Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that.
Where did that come from? That is a new thing. I'm telling you, it's almost like it's a technological sound effect that we're making in response to always being consumed by electronics.
I think so.
Siri, listen, I have just cursed you. If you haven't heard it, you're going to start and you're going to be like, yeah, why is everybody? I've actually found myself almost doing that a couple of times until I realized how much it agitates me. And then I realized I'd just be mad at myself. And that's not going to happen because I sure do love me. So the thing went disappearing. Ready for take three?
Hey, Todd.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Show started.
Wow. You don't have a whole lot of patience. Apparently, you like instant gratification, which is exactly what Table Talk Magazine was focusing on, how we have become a society. We want it when? Now. And if we don't get it, we get so anxious. And this particular article, again, Table Talk Magazine, attributes it to that rascally cell phone. I don't think that it would be wise for any of us to ever say, yeah, you know, I see all these people, they go out to eat, they're sitting there on their cell phones. I'm not that way. Well, probably not by degree, but do any of us escape the pull of our cell phones? This, okay, probably won't surprise you if you know a germaphobe. If we go out to eat, we sit down, and the first order of business is if the waitron, because there are no waitresses and waiters anymore, a waitron comes to the table, asks for the beverage, water without ice, if you'd be so kind. And then what do? I immediately go to the bathroom to wash my hands because germ killer's good. Hand washing. Okay, I do both. But then back, and sometimes yes, sometimes no, depending on where we've just been, Mrs. Friel will do the same thing. And there I sit by myself, and there it is on the table. Oh, Todd, look at me. I can't just sit there and look around, which probably would give us better table talk, better conversation. Look at that guy, the way that he eats over there. It's like a steam shovel going in. Have some stuff to... But boy, the pull of that cell... Do any of us really escape its gravitational pull? From the article, we've been conditioned to assume that waiting is something to be avoided at all costs. And I've always got to be amused. I've always got to have some sort of stimulation, electronic preferably. It just instant, isn't it? That pull for that? We are the generation of Disney fast passes, direct flights, eBay bidding, television streaming, quick bites, free two-day shipping. Two-day shipping? Who has got 2 days to wait for your vitamins to show up?
Same day around here.
Same day around here. It's insane.
It is.
It's like you push buy. Ding dong. What? Amazon. They're like everywhere. Certain occasions in life, however, remind us that we have no choice but to wait. We might be able to gratify certain desires here and now, such as ordering dinner, but at the regarding the ultimate things in life, they require waiting. And sometimes it takes a long time. And I think increasingly we're all being trained. I got to have it now. Now, that's going to breed something inside of us, isn't it? That's going to cause us to be an anxious people. It's going to cause us to be frustrated all the time and kind of, because everything isn't in place at the moment. Waiting is a good thing. Boredom is a good thing. Well, who was I just talking to? This is a conversation no doubt you've had probably 50 times. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't play video games. Mother just said, get outside. What am I supposed to do? You'll figure it out. Play. When do I get to come home? When the sun comes down. Okay. And then out you go. Not anymore. It's video games. It's election. In fact, hold on a second. I got it right here. I received an email. This is from Zach. The problem with video games, he writes, this was just an email sent to id@wretched.org. What I saw as just a hobby was turning into a deadly catalyst. Yikes. I noticed when I'm enthralled in a game and my son comes up to me needing something or simply just wanting to adore me. How's about those precious moments? I'm very impatient with him, and I hear the serpent in my ear calling him an inconvenience. So Zach was consumed in the video games because they stimulate us. They do stimulate us, and it gives us some sort of buzz in our brains. I think his email is worth hearing if you are perhaps spending too much time with a controlled gamer thingy-majig in your hand. What was it about video games that captured my heart so much? Answer, escape. Escape from the trouble in this world that floods the news. Escape from the responsibility of sacrificially loving and discipling my wife and raising my son. That's honest, Zach. Instead of pretending to yield weapons, I will never yield to defeat foes. I will never defeat. Why don't I spend my time sharpening and mastering the sword of the spirit to defeat the real enemy inside of me instead of these pixel enemies? I will spend hours looking up guides on how to do something in a video game, but won't spend the same time memorizing verses, chapters, and books of the word that will change my life. Video games will never be a reality, but the fight that my captain calls me to is real. You feeling that lately? I can actually conquer foes and even save real souls. So Saturday, I put them away. And on Sunday, I noticed a tangible difference talking to my wife about it. God bless her patience with me. He noticed that without video games, I'm more present, patient, and loving. That with video games, I'm very short-fused, impatient, and dare I say, unloving. Closing admonition from Zach. I'd love to get a warning out to other young men my age, especially men married with children. Put away childish things. Set your affections on things above where Christ is. Good word. Electronics, they are powerful. And maybe an encouragement, Mom and Dad. Kick your kids out of the house. Send them outside. Think back when you were a child. Whether you had toys or not, it just didn't matter. You'd pick up a stick and you'd turn it into a sword. Whatever you would do, you climb trees. Just do something. Go out there, kids, and get hurt. Do something that toughens you up a little bit. Play and let your imagination run wild. But instead, we let them just sit there and stare at a screen. And if we're honest, Mom and Dad, we have that propensity too. Back to our Table Talk article. We're not careful. We've got to be careful. Because if our technologies can infect the soil of our minds in such a way that stunts the growth of godly patience, we can become like Esau, who considered the birthright worthless compared to the immediate need to satiate his hunger. The iPhone didn't create impatience, but it has reshaped and conditioned our expectations. The modern age of technology, we need it now. I got to get buzzed this second. I can't wait for my wife to come back from the bathroom washing her hands. I got to look at something. I got to see a video. I've got to check my emails. No, you don't. Don't think we're made to live that way. We don't recognize it in ourselves, but it might be making us a person to live with. And it has implications for the church. From the article, preaching can't compete with the visual simulation. And the immediacy of sermons are shortened to accommodate dwindling attention spans. Perhaps they need to be shortened, but I don't buy that because I see people, they can watch an entire football game without moving a muscle except to get up when Domino's delivers the pizza. They can listen to a sermon. It just needs to be captivating. The sacraments don't meet our need for a media induced emotional highs. So the Lord's Supper is accompanied by visual or audio stimuli to accommodate our conditioned brains. Oof. That hurts. if your church does that, why? Why do we need that mood music going on? Why do we see that so often in these churches? They tend to be prosperity churches, word faith churches. Why do we need that? Well, it's because people need it, because we're conditioned for it. I got to have it going on. I got to have stimulation all the time. From Table Talk, it concludes, we are to view light momentary affliction as preparatory for the incomparable and eternal weight of glory that awaits us. We're waiting for that day. We should be longing for that day. We're not as much as we should be because we want it. We want it now. And if it's going to be a long time from now, I'm not even going to think about it. And isn't that a shame? I'll ask the same question I would encourage you to ask you. Who's zooming who? Who's controlling who? Your cell phone controlling you, or are you controlling it? This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for a Wretched News break here on Wretched Radio. I'm Jimmy Hicks. We start today with the Washington Post, who has decided to shine a spotlight and uncover the efforts of the Taliban to tackle climate change. Who knew that some of the biggest environmental stewards in the world were a regime known for its human rights violations and oppression of women? The article is reporting that the Taliban government is asking imams to emphasize environmental protection during their Friday prayers. Moving to Canada now, where a Canadian pastor is making waves with her unique interpretation of the Ten Commandments. The Right Reverend Sherry DeNovo of Trinity St. Paul's Center for Faith, Justice, and the Arts in Toronto. Wow, that's a potpourri mixture if I've ever heard one. Anyway, she's decided that thou shall not commit adultery isn't really about monogamy at all. Apparently, it's just a misunderstanding propagated by those pesky conservatives. DeNovo says that since polygamy was once the norm, Jesus wouldn't have any issues with it at all today. In her Instagram video tagged with the hashtag Queer Bible, DeNovo goes on to suggest that we can easily add all sorts of modern gender identities to Paul's words in Galatians. Well, add to Paul's words? How about that? Clearly, when Paul wrote about there being no Jew or Gentile, male or female in Christ, what he really meant was no cisgender or gender diverse. It's so amazing how a 2,000-year-old text can be ahead of its time when you just ignore context and basic hermeneutics. In educational news, a graduate of St. Cloud State University is suing her alma mater after discovering that a mandatory fee in her tuition went to a liberal student activist group. The young student was shocked to find out that she had been unknowingly funding an organization called Students United, which advocates for controversial policies like the abolition of student debt. The group even runs a charming little website that I will not repeat the name of in this newscast, but it is delightfully articulate if you happen to find it. And the upset student who paid her own way through college without taking on any type of debt is understandably miffed about being forced to subsidize speech she disagrees with. Her lawsuit argues that this mandatory fee violates her First Amendment rights. In corporate news, Microsoft has decided, get ready, hold on to your hat for this one, they've decided that diversity, equity, and inclusion are no longer business critical or smart. Could you ever believe that? The tech giant laid off its DEI team, with the team leader explaining in an email that DEI programs are no longer business critical or as smart as they were in 2020. No, I don't think they were smart in 2020 either. And that's been today's Wretched News Break. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 1273. Thomas Aquinas completes work on Summa Theologica, the theological masterpiece of the Middle Ages. Aquinas synthesized faith and reason, incorporating Aristotelian philosophy into his work, and provided a theological framework for Catholic doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
There's grieving, and there's grieving from a suicide. This is Wretched Radio. Help, someone I love died by suicide. Unfortunately, more Christians are mourning because a loved one has chosen to take the wrong path. It might be a path that you and I do not understand. We cannot possibly comprehend, but it seemed like the right road for them at the time because they were staring at a problem that they believed was bigger than God. And the only conclusion that they thought would relieve them of the angst and the pain and the weight that they were feeling was to choose death. And it leaves those left behind in a profound wake of grief. And the suicide rate right now, I believe it's the number two leading cause of death in America. We are living in a time where people are without hope. People are without any mechanism to respond to the difficulties of life. We see that. I just hear it so often in the younger crowd. I'm not talking about Christian kids. I'm talking about unbelievers. Everything is so stressful. It's like, I can't handle this. It was just an invitation to a birthday party. I just don't have the bandwidth for this right now. And you could perhaps mock it. I don't think that's a very helpful response. Or we can ask, what in the world is going on here? And the answer is the world's worldview has so infiltrated kids that they just do not process well. They just don't have the skills because they don't have the biblical wisdom, which is something, if you're a young person, please seek wisdom. And this is going to sound radical. I actually preached on this a little bit on Sunday. Couldn't help it because Jesus called himself greater than Solomon, who was the wisest man ever. So let's take Jesus at his word, which is always the right way to take his words, and consider the wisdom of the wisest man, short of Jesus, of course, who is wisdom. What would he say to young people? Now, this is the wisest guy in the world. Right now, if you're young, you've got a cell phone and it's speaking to you. And the world's wisdom is shouting at you. Now, let's just consider your choice for a moment, shall we? You can listen to the world that says a boy can be a girl, a cat can be a dog, up is down, there is no truth, you came out of primordial goo. You can listen to that, or you can listen to the wisest man to ever live, because God gave him wisdom. Solomon was at, what do you want? And he didn't choose expansion of territory. Apparently, he wasn't familiar with the prayer of Jabez. He said, Lord, wisdom, give me wisdom, because I'm like a child. I don't know how to lead these people. Give me wisdom. And God loved that request. And by the way, doesn't James 1 reiterate that? Ask for wisdom. God happily gives wisdom. This is the wisdom of the wisest man to ever live. He's writing a book called Proverbs. He didn't write all of them, but he wrote most of them. And he's writing to young people, specifically his kids. And this is what it says. Here's the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, wrote the Proverbs so that you can know wisdom and instruction, perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. You want to be good at all of those things? That's better than any university degree you'll ever get. Those things are more precious, more valuable, and way more practical than any math formula you will master as you pursue a university. You get smart, well, sometimes, at universities. You're supposed to go there to get smart. The wisest man in the world would say, yeah, you go ahead and do that, but get wise. Whatever you do, be wise about this. Now, he keeps going. He wrote the Proverbs to give prudence to the simple, to the young man and lady, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, here comes the kidney punch. Maybe you're younger and you're going, okay, yeah, I dig that. Wisdom. All right, I'll keep my eye open for that. Well, where can you find wisdom? First and foremost, the Bible. But listen to what Solomon, the wisest man in the world, my son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the law of your mother. If you're young, you're a fool if you don't listen to your parents. That's what Solomon just called you. You're a fool if you do not listen to your parents. And the wisest man in the world pleads through seven chapters, please listen to me. I've been around the block. You're barely out of diapers. Listen to me. Seek my wisdom. Listen to my instruction. And that word goes for all of us. And by the way, this never ends. This isn't just a shot at Gen Zers. It's for all of us. Seek wisdom from older people. No matter how old you are, there's somebody older. Find out what they know. Seek wisdom. You need it, young person, because so many are listening to the wisdom of the world, and it's driving them to suicide. And it's awful. It is absolutely awful. Nobody in my family has ever done that. But when I hear about it from somebody that I know and care about, it is like a kidney punch, and it's not even my family. You know, we can feel sad. Somebody says they lost a loved one, a grandparent, their parents died, and you go, oh, I'm so sorry. That's hard. Even as an adult, to lose mom and dad, that's a hard thing. But when it's a suicide, oh. So I would say this. If you're thinking about doing that, please don't do it. Because here's what you're ultimately going to do. All that weight and angst that you're currently feeling, you might escape it, but you're disseminating it to everybody you know. Everybody you know, and the people who know the people you know. Don't do it. There is hope for you. There is a way out of the darkness. I'm telling you, the light of Jesus Christ, it shines so brightly that it can remove the darkness very quickly. There's a better way. Do not take your own life. And if you know somebody who has, and no doubt you know somebody who knows somebody who has, how do we grieve through this monstrous act? That's what this booklet, Help, Someone I Love Died by Suicide. The place to begin is to acknowledge that your loved one's death was out of your control. Now, this, you might be thinking, oh, this seems like it's a diatribe for those who have lived through this. No, this is a diatribe for all of us. These are words that you can share with. If you can understand how it is that people are grieving, what they're thinking, and how they process a suicide, then you can do better than Job's comforters. You can actually know what to say. Isn't that a struggle? Isn't that a struggle? If somebody called you right now and said, hey, would you please go visit somebody from your church in the hospital and minister to them? Psalm 23? I guess that's what we'll do. What will I say to that person? That's what this exercise is about. You can tell and encourage somebody, this was not your fault. Don't rack up guilt over this. Even if your last words were hostile, they made the choice. It's on them. It's not on you. You did not want it to happen, and you would have prevented it if you could. Your response to this tragic event is within your control. To recover from your loss, you must take charge of your own grieving. Now, let's be sensitive about timing here. This is a process, but this is still a right word. Don't let grieving whip you around. Don't let the tail wag you. Grieve, but have it under control. This is from the author. I'm not suggesting you stuff your emotions, deny them, or just be strong for others. Grieving serves a purpose. The goal is to help us consider how that purpose can be fulfilled in you. And well-meaning friends, they want to rush survivors of suicide to just get over it. Wrong! Somebody who lives through that is never going to get over it. It affects the entirety of your life, perhaps like no other event. From the booklet, he may have taken himself out of this world, but he cannot take himself out of your heart. Your eyes will leak whenever you remember her for as long as you live. And we can remember that as we are trying to walk alongside somebody who is grieving over a suicide. This is profound. Why aren't you eating? When are you going to get out of the house? When was the last time you washed your hair? Careful, careful. This is a profound, deep wound. And it's going to be that scar. It's always going to be visible. And it will always be near the top of the mind of those who survive. And so the question that this particular booklet seeks to answer is, so how do we do it? How do we grieve through? Can you think of a greater tragedy than the suicide of a loved one? Next on Wretched Radio. I know now many wretched people are familiar with the Masters Academy International because you participated in our Bible distribution program to the Philippines. 10,000 John MacArthur Study Bibles were sent courtesy of you. How sweet is that? Heaven is just going to rock. You're going to be sitting at a table. What's your name? It'll be somebody with a Filipino name. Oh, Philippines. You know what? I remember a long time ago, there was a Bible campaign through wretched.org/Bible where we sent MacArthur Study Bibles to the Philippines. You gave to that? I received a MacArthur Study Bible in the Philippines. No way! So if you're at the internet and you visit wretched.org/pastor, you're going to discover Masters Academy International trains pastors internationally in 19 different locations. Thousands of men, as we speak, are being trained to rightly divide the word of truth. You want to strengthen Christ Church internationally? Please visit wretched.org/pastor.
Thank you for listening to Wretched Radio today. Meet Dr. Andrew Walker.
And I can tell you from all of my reading and all of my studies, non-Christian worldviews, non-Christian ideologies will tell you we have no idea how to account for human dignity. And Christianity steps in and says, because human beings are given that image and that dignity by their creator.
Dr. Walker is one of the 8 new voices joining this ministry later this year. Dr. Walker is the managing editor of World Opinions. He's also an associate professor of Christian ethics and public theology from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And we cannot wait for Dr. Walker and other leaders just like him to join this ministry later this year and provide critical content for navigating today's darkened culture. Your support can help us bring even more voices like Dr. Walker's to the forefront. Just join our $250,000 match campaign today at wretched.org/fellows. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
You're familiar with Tomorrow Clubs. It's a ministry that we have happily lauded over the years. We commend them heartily to you because they are an efficient ministry. They've got the gospel right, and they go to places where the gospel is usually not propagated. Very poor parts of the globe, specifically Eastern Europe and in parts of Africa, the Tomorrow Clubs, working in conjunction with a local church to preach the gospel to the kids, sing, have them memorize scripture, pray, and entire towns are getting saved. We love the Tomorrow Clubs, and if you want to be encouraged and be reminded that Jesus is building his church, they just reached 1,000 of these clubs. That's encouraging, and I'd like to encourage you to please consider become a ministry partner to the Tomorrow Clubs. If you like evangelistic ministries, they're the ticket. They're the bomb. You can learn more at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. The book of Micah contains prophecies against the kingdoms of Judah and Israel. Micah warns of God's judgment for idolatry and oppressing the poor. But he offers hope of salvation in the coming Messiah, who is a shepherd, a judge, and a ruler. Those whom God has saved are charged to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with their God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You're never going to guess this. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy reading an article from Fox Business talking about the suicide rate of veterans. It's 57% higher than the general public. I think you and I hear that and we go, oh, we feared that. Maybe had a sense of that, because what happens, those wounds that people experience, and I'm not talking about bullets or shrapnel wounds, I'm talking about the wounds to the conscience, the moral wounds that are inflicted on a soldier who must do things that maybe go against what they were always taught. And taking the life of a human, that's whoa. That's no small thing. Or what you saw on the battlefield, or the activities of those on the battlefield. You didn't participate, but you witnessed it. That is deep. And so PTSD, even though that I'm not a fan of the D, post-traumatic stress, it's normal. It's not abnormal. It's entirely normal to walk away with wounds from that. But it's not a disorder. That's what happens to the human psyche when there is a wound that is that profound. But this statistic from Fox Business about one of the leading demographics of suicide, Jimmy, would you have guessed construction workers?
What?
Exactly. This is according to, this is 2021, 56 out of 100,000 men in construction die by suicide. It is one of the highest suicide rates compared to other industries. The article really doesn't explain, well, it tries to explain why. It's some surface things, the pressure, deadlines, it's risky. We could speculate, but ultimately, these individuals, they've run out of hope. They've run out of gas. And it seems like a good idea to take their own lives. And there is no greater tragedy for a loved one than to get that phone call. And that means if we are going to one another, which is what we are supposed to do, very excited, Greg Gifford, he's going to be in town. He's going to preach on this message Sunday morning at Alpharetta Bible Church. He's going to be in studio, which you can participate in. He's going to be talking about the inner versus the outer man, mental health diagnoses, psychotropic medication, what you should do if your kid is told you've got ADHD. He's going to help us with that. By the way, you can join us for any of those free, wretched.org/mental health. Wretched.org/mental health. He's going to preach Colossians 3 and how we are to, this little place called the local church, what we're supposed to be doing with one another, caring for one another, loving one another. And if you and I don't get equipped to do that, we're not going to do it as well. When somebody in your church lets you know on a Sunday morning a loved one died from suicide. So let's see what we can learn together from a little booklet called Help Someone I Love Died by Suicide. This is from Shepherd's Press. This might help you help somebody grieve. Here's the advice. Number one, if you are going through it, grieve verbally. If you are not going through it, but somebody you care about is, encourage them to verbalize it. It does help. It doesn't fix, but it's just the way that humans process stuff. It just get it off of your chest. Well, there's some truth to that. It doesn't fix it entirely, but it does help in part. Stuffed emotions will eventually come out at a time and place that's probably inconvenient. Trying to bravely push aside your feelings of grief and pain will only prolong them. So you're going to have to confront them. We process grief largely by vocalizing it. It can be helpful to tell others what you saw and heard, how you felt, perhaps more than once. It's okay, and we should be willing to listen. That's the third time they've talked. Yep. Let it be 30 times three. Initial shock leads to a period of disorganization. Talking through what happened and how you responded may help reboot the mind as it strives to return to more normal functioning. In the process of reorganization, you try to put life back together. So talking about your experience can help you sort out the facts and interpret them rightly, which can move recovery forward. So if you're experiencing it, you've stuffed it, find a trusted believer, let it out. And encourage those to do it. They might not feel like doing it immediately, so we don't bark at them. Hey, you got to talk about it to get through this. But we do want to encourage it, don't we? They can be troubled by an imaginary video replaying the trauma in their minds. Thinking this is bad, they try to shut it off. But the harder they try to suppress it, the more insistent it becomes. If that's happening to you, let the video play. As unpleasant as it is, the video is actually helping to move you forward in grieving. It's your mind's way of trying to get things right. Let that be an encouragement to you, and may we encourage those who are going through it to do just that. Face the truth is encouragement number two. When Jesus wept, bystanders rightly concluded, see how he loved him. Tears in the presence of death are not a sign of weakness, but love. The saddest suicide scenes I go to are not the ones where people cry streams of tears, but where nobody cries because nobody cares, or I would add, because, well, they don't want to cry. If you are experiencing death from suicide, cry. It's right. And encourage it, and don't discourage it in those that we are trying to minister to. It is right. In fact, a good biblical counselor, they'll tell you, it is not uncommon for them to weep with those who weep. Hey, wait a second. That's exactly what we are commanded to do. Next encouragement, address your anger. Beware of false guilt, because you're going to replay some tapes and you're going to go, oh, I could have done. I should. What did that contribute to? Hey, careful. That's false guilt from the booklet. Guilt is a regular companion of suicide. The simple truth of the matter is that only one person is responsible for any suicide, the victim. That's a tough pill to swallow. So instead of ascribing responsibility to our suffering loved one, we nobly sacrifice by taking it on ourselves. Don't do it. Let the guilt lay on whom it should lay. And family and friends and co-workers will be tempted to take on a burden of guilt and play the what-if game. What if I'd invited her to lunch? What if I hadn't told him I was too busy to talk right now? The list of what-ifs will drive you bonkers. But the bottom line is the same. It is on them. You're not responsible for what your loved one did. Now, some survivors feel a bit of relief that the threats, the anxiety, and fears are finally over. What do you do with that? It's a person that had been struggling, and there's a sense of, well, I don't need to worry for the person anymore. And guess what that produces? Oh, no, why am I feeling these things? From the booklet, that can be another source of false guilt. Give yourself a break. Feeling a sense of relief doesn't mean you're happy it happened, and it doesn't make you responsible. Walking on eggshells for months or years while watching someone you love decline emotionally and spiritually is a hard way to live. It's understandable that you would feel some relief at the end of that path. And by the way, that goes for you too. If you have been living somebody with a terminal illness and it was hard, oh, the seasons you've gone through, the ups and a whole lot of downs, the dynamic shifting and changing and the difficulties and the research and learning about things that you just never thought you'd have to be involved in. And when it stops, you might feel like, oh, and then knock, 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 here comes false guilt. A feeling of relief that does not mean that you're glad that somebody died. It just means that that part of your life you no longer have to live through. That doesn't make you click your heels, but it certainly shouldn't make you feel guilty. Grieving a suicide also involves shame. There's a disgrace associated with suicide that is not found with any other death. That people will hear about it and go, oh, what kind of family do you come from? Don't take that on yourself. Don't compare your grief to that of others is another encouragement, because everybody grieves differently. Even when grieving in the company of others, the common idea of progression through standard stages of grief is a myth. You know, the five stages of grieving. No, don't follow the stages. Don't go to the internet and read about how you're supposed to grieve. Grieve, grieve, grieve. Models like this may be of interest in terms of the kinds of things that grieving people may expect, but they're harmful when applied as a one-size-fits-all standard for grieving. You got cultural norms, religious convictions, differences in personalities. It affects how you grieve, so don't compare yourself and your grieving to other people's griefs. There's no expiration date for grief. Take the time you need, but strive to do it biblically. Strive to do it with truth. And if you know somebody who is walking through this veil of tears, bring God's word sensitively, thoughtfully, and with good timing. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.